Over dinner, we discussed the viability of organizing a party with some of the well-to-do families in the area, but decided it had to be done with Langley's blessing. Sylvia was adamant she wouldn't have one without him present, and although Jack was less enthusiastic, he did agree that Langley should be kept informed. His reaction only deepened my curiosity about his relationship with his uncle, if indeed that's what Langley was. While the two of them seemed to be in frequent conflict, and occasionally I was even convinced that Jack despised him, he always gave Langley due respect as master of the household. I admired him all the more for it. Tommy brought out a dessert of jelly and served a portion to each of us, but when he got to Jack, he almost dropped the plate when Jack accidentally bumped him.
"Bloody hell, Tommy,"
Jack said, catching the footman's elbow to steady the plate.
"Sorry, Jackie. No harm done, eh?"
He seemed to realise what he'd said as soon as the words left his mouth. He flushed and glanced at me. Jack pretended nothing was out of the ordinary and avoided my gaze altogether. If I hadn't overheard their conversation a few nights earlier, I would have been confused by the informal exchange. It did get me thinking, however. After dinner, I pretended I had a headache, but instead of retiring to my room, I went in search of Tommy in the service area. I found him in the large kitchen polishing a silver tray as the maids cleaned up after dinner. When they saw me, their chatter died, and they stopped what they were doing.
"Lady Violet!"
Tommy pushed back his chair to stand, toppling it over.
"Is everything all right?"
"Yes, thank you. Tommy, is there somewhere we can talk?" He covered a nervous little cough with his hand and led me to a sitting room nearby. Neither of us sat, and he remained by the door, his hands behind his back, chin out. It was his footman's stance, the one he used when he stood in the dining room as we ate. "Tommy, I have some questions for you."
"Yes, my lady."
"Tell me about the first time you met Jack." There was a slight twitching of muscle in his cheek, a faltering of his steady gaze.
"I can't rightly remember, my lady."
"I know you knew him before he came to Frackingham." He blinked, but said nothing. "I know that Jack came from a London slum, and that you did too. What I don't know, and what I want you to tell me, is what led him here."
"I couldn't say."
The man was loyal. I'd give him that. "Why are you protecting him?"
"He don't need my protection. But a man is entitled to his privacy, ma'am. If he don't want you to know about his past, then I've got no right to tell you."
"If he didn't want me to know?" I stepped up to him. He was much taller than me, but not as tall as Jack. "Why not me specifically?" Sweat beaded on his brow, yet he didn't answer. "If you don't tell me, Tommy, I'm afraid I'll have to go to Mr. August Langley and inform him that you knew about Patrick breaking into the house too. I doubt he'll be pleased to hear that. He might not throw his nephew out, but I doubt his mercy will extend to you. Do you like your job here?" Tommy gawped, slack-jawed at me.
You chirped to Mr. Langley?"
"I don't want to." I turned away so he couldn't see me cringe as I lied. "But if I had to..."
"Bloody hell," Tommy muttered. "He'll kill me."
I wasn't sure whether he meant Jack or Langley. "I won't tell either of them what is said between us now. It'll be our secret." He muttered something under his breath, then sighed.
"Promise you won't tell Jack I said this."
"I promise." His body lost some of its stiffness, as if he'd decided to shed his footman persona and put on his real one.
"His name's Jack Cutler, not Langley. I met him when he came to join our family."
"Family?"
"Not a real one, but that's what our little group called ourselves. We were orphans, him and me. Patrick too, and some others. We looked after one another. We had to, or we'd starve to death, or be taken by the Rozzers and be sent to the workhouses. Or worse."
"Worse than the workhouses?" I'd heard about the terrible conditions of workhouses, how the food was riddled with maggots, the beds and clothes with lice, and the children forced to work inhuman hours or suffer a beating.
"There were Haymarket Hectors out to get boys and girls like us," he said. "Prostitution,"
he clarified when I shook my head. Oh my God. I felt sick to my stomach, and suddenly so very lucky that I'd only had to endure the solitude of an attic for 15 years. There was much worse out there for orphans. I'd been fortunate, as had Jack, Tommy, and their friends.
"We got by," Tommy said. "Stealing, mostly. Sometimes finding work doing the jobs no one else wanted. We never froze in winter, though. Jack and his fingers saw to that. Then that big mute comes up and hands Jack a letter one day. Jack can't read, so he takes it to the baker down the street who can. The letter says he's the nephew of August Langley and that he wanted to adopt him."
"And then?" Tommy shrugged.
"Then he came here, bringing me with him. Langley didn't want me, though, so he made me a footman, because Jack says he's not staying if I don't, too. He's a good friend, like a brother. We've always taken care of each other."
"So, is he August Langley's nephew? You said his name was Cutler, but now he goes by Langley." Tommy shrugged.
"Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. All I know is the old man gave Jack an education, horses, an allowance. Why would he be so generous if he weren't a relation?"
"I suppose." Yet it didn't make sense. According to Sylvia, there'd been 3 Langley brothers. Her father, Jack's father, and August himself. Yet Jack had been a Cutler, not a Langley. And what of Tommy's and Patrick's doubts on the matter? I thought about asking him if Jack had a more nefarious motive for staying, but decided not to. He was as loyal to Jack as he could be, and if he did know anything, I was sure he'd deny it. "Thank you, Tommy. I'm sorry to have put you through this." He sighed.
"I suppose it had to come out sooner or later. You'll keep your promise, won't you, m'lady? You won't tell Jack you and me spoke."
"I won't. Are you afraid of him?"
"No, but I don't want him to be disappointed in me. He trusts me, and that's the way I want it to stay."
I squeezed his arm, and he dipped his head, but not before I saw his cheeks redden. "Don't worry, I won't say anything. Believe me, I understand what it's like to have Jack disappointed in me." He blinked.
"You do?"
I nodded. "I followed him in London when he went to see Patrick. He thought I told Langley about the meeting, but I wouldn't tell that man anything if I could help it." His frown drew his thick brows together into a single line.
"I think I know who it was who told Mr. Langley."
"Who?"
"Bollard."
I gasped. How do you know?
I can't be sure, but he left Frackingham just after you and got back just before. Maybe he went to London.
I nodded slowly. Perhaps he did. Do you think he might have followed Jack too and overheard the conversation?
Perhaps.
But surely I would have noticed. And yet I had heard footsteps following us, although not until we were almost back at Claridge's. It was entirely possible that I was too distracted earlier to hear them.
He can read lips, you know,
Tommy said. Bollard? I thought he was a mute, not deaf. He shrugged.
He's not deaf, but I know he can read lips like a deaf person. I wouldn't put it past him to have told Mr. Langley what he saw and heard.
No, nor would I. Chapter 10. Bollard opened the door on my knock and gave a formal, curt bow. When he straightened, he raised his eyebrows in question, but did not step aside. I need to speak to Mr. Langley, I said.
She may enter,
came Langley's voice from within. Bollard opened the door wider, and I went through. It took me a moment to realize Langley wasn't in the immediate part of the room furnished as a parlor, but in the end that served as a laboratory. He sat at a low table, his head bent over a microscope. Mr. Langley, I... He held up his forefinger for silence, and I dutifully shut my mouth, biting my tongue in the process. I waited as he wrote something down, then wheeled his chair out and turned to look at me.
"I'm glad you've come to see me, Violet," he said. "We need to speak about London again. It'll be easier without Jack here."
He moved his chair forward, pushing the wheels with his hands. It looked arduous, and progress was slow until Bollard rescued him. Once he was near me, Langley indicated I should sit.
"Refreshments, Bollard," he said.
When the servant hesitated, he added in a softer voice,
"I'll be all right."
Bollard left, but the exchange piqued my curiosity. It was almost as if Bollard's concern went beyond that of a master for his servant. I suppose they'd been together a long time, and Bollard did do more than a mere valet or laboratory assistant. He was Langley's legs, too, and, it seemed, his eyes and ears. Why he thought I'd hurt Langley was a mystery, though.
"I'm sorry the hypnotist couldn't help," Langley said. "Truly sorry. We'll have to continue your training. Is Jack making progress?"
"A little," I hedged.
"Good. It was a shame you had to witness his temper, Violet. Jack can be very passionate. I do hope you realize that it was entirely directed at me and had nothing to do with you."
"Why does he dislike you so?" He rubbed the palm of his hands along the arms of his wheelchair.
"You would have to ask him that."
"I find it strange, considering you rescued him from the streets and have given him a comfortable life here at Frackingham. Shouldn't he be grateful?"
"To repeat, you should be asking him."
"I followed him into the slums of London, although I suspect you know that already." He blinked slowly, and I took that as confirmation. He knew his way in the darkness, which is remarkable since my escort and I got lost on the way back to Claridge's.
What are you getting at, Violet?
It was difficult to speak of the matter without implicating Tommy. I needed to tread carefully. Is Jack originally from that very slum where he met the man named Patrick? He didn't answer. He's not your nephew, is he?
Isn't he?
Mr. Langley, I have agreed to remain here until Christmas, against my better judgment. If you continue to evade sensible questions, then I may not be able to keep that promise. I don't know where I got the courage to speak so boldly to such a man as August Langley. The fact that I had seemed to trouble him less than me. I swallowed and hoped I hadn't overstepped the mark.
If you want to find out about Jack's past, ask him. Now, if you came here to waste my time, then we're finished. You may go. It seems we don't have much to say to one another after all.
He shifted his wheelchair backwards, away from me. He was dismissing me as casually as he dismissed Bollard. It irked me that he could disregard such an important point. I stood abruptly and caught the arm of his chair. I am asking you, Mr. Langley. I suddenly wasn't afraid of him any more. What could a crippled man do to me? If Bollard were there, it may be a different matter. But he wasn't. If Langley turned me out, I'd return to Windermere. Is Jack your blood relative?
Let go of my chair, Violet.
Answer me, Mr. Langley. He caught my sleeve and dragged me down to his level. His face was a distorted mask of anger, his mouth a twisted gash.
You do not tell me what to do.
Something inside me shattered, and I jerked free of his grip. I did not step back. I did not look away or run for the door. I would not fear this man, nor would I endure any more of his lies and threats. If I wanted to walk away, I would. I had been kept prisoner at Windermere for 15 years. I'd been denied a life. And even if that life had turned out to be a dire, desperate one, at least it would have been mine to make of it what I could. I'd had enough of being told what to do and how to conduct myself, enough of being told to accept my condition and situation, that I ought to consider myself lucky. I wasn't lucky. I was a prisoner, and I'd be damned if I would endure it on anyone else's terms any more. Especially someone as nasty as Langley. "You let Jack think I told you about his visit to Patrick," I said, choosing the one thing I knew the answer to, the one thing I could absolutely blame him for without a doubt. "Why? Why didn't you tell him it was Bollard?" His lips peeled back, and he bared his teeth.
I already told you. I don't answer to you.
He spat out each word as if they were poison on his tongue.
Your father may be an earl, but here that means nothing. You're nobody. Your opinion means nothing. Your questions even less. You are a prisoner. And I do not answer your questions.
His voice rang in my ears, throbbed in my veins. My blood rose like a tidal wave, rushed through me, fast and fierce. Hot. It was so loud that I hardly heard the door open, but I turned just in time to see Jack enter, Bollard at his heels.
No!
Jack shouted. His brows crashed together in a deep frown.
Stop it, August. Are you mad?
Sparks flew from his fingers onto the floor, but he quickly stomped them out as he approached us.
"Tell her she's not a prisoner. Tell her she can come and go. Tell her!"
Langley laughed, the sound like fingernails down a blackboard.
"Of course she can't leave. You know that as well as I do."
"Jack!" I cried. "Is that true?" But Jack's gaze was fixed on his uncle. It was filled with such fury that I was amazed his fingers didn't explode.
"I will not be a party to this."
His voice was quiet, cold, and filled me with dread.
"You can't leave, Violet,"
Langley said.
"Jack has known this all along. He's been keeping an eye on you, lying to you. We all have."
Everything dimmed, and I thought I was going to fall asleep at the worst possible moment. But then my vision cleared, only to see sparks spraying around the room like fireworks. So many of them. Too many. They landed on the curtain, the floor, the table, and even in Langley's lap. He yelped and swatted them just as the curtain went up in a whoosh of flames. Some of the furniture had caught alight, the floorboards too. We had to get out.
"My research!"
Langley cried, wheeling himself toward the laboratory.
"Not now,"
Jack cried.
"Bollard!"
Bollard rushed past me, and I stumbled forward, my body suddenly heavy, my head filled with cotton wool. Jack caught me and picked me up. We didn't combust. That was something. I was a rag doll in his arms. Exhaustion dragged at me, pulled me into a slumber. But I did not fall asleep.
"Get out!"
Jack shouted.
"Forget the papers!"
But Bollard didn't listen. He scooped up some notebooks and stuffed them into his jacket. Then he returned and picked up Langley. They followed us to the door, but flames were already licking up the doorframe. Wood cracked and popped in the heat, and I felt that I might do the same. I burned as if I had a fever. Jack held me tighter, then ran through the doorway onto the landing.
"Tommy!"
he shouted.
"Water!"
My head bumped against Jack's shoulder as he ran down the stairs, giving orders to the servants to put out the flames.
"Don't endanger yourselves."
He carried me outside, where the crisp evening air slammed against my hot face. It was raining, and I was so glad I almost cried. The rain would help put the fire out. Bollard and Langley followed us, and the female servants weren't far behind, carrying silver and other valuables. Sylvia wasn't among them. "We have to find her," I said, clawing at Jack's shirt. He glanced down at me. He seemed shocked to see me still awake.
"I'll do it,"
he said. But as he set me gently on the ground, Tommy ran out of the house, Sylvia tucked into his side. He brought her to us, and she flopped down beside me and drew me into a hug. She sobbed against my throat. I held her close, so relieved she was all right. She was shaking and crying, but seemed unharmed. Tommy and Jack raced off to join the male servants fighting the fire. Smoke billowed out of the windows and rose into the wet night. I heard Jack give orders to protect the rest of the house, and I closed my eyes and prayed for the first time in a long time. I just hoped God remembered me and listened.
"Sylvia,"
said Langley. He was still in Bollard's arms. The servant held him as if he weighed nothing and seemed in no mind to put him down.
Sylvia, are you harmed?
She shook her head and wiped her cheeks. I'm all right, Uncle. I'd gone to bed early, but Tommy rescued me. If he hadn't... She sobbed again, and I circled her shoulders with my arm. He's so brave. It will all be over soon, I said, eyeing the top floor of the house. Perhaps I should go and help. No! Sylvia and Langley cried. Stay here with me, Sylvia said. Let the men do it. But I ought to help.
It's not your fault,
Langley said. He sounded surprisingly humble and kind. There was none of the anger and taunting of earlier. The fire must have shocked him into sensitivity. It must certainly be a shocking thing to watch as one's house went up in flames. I know that, I said, but I don't like to do nothing when I'm needed.
There's a well out the back, and a pump and hoses stored in the service area for such an emergency. They'll cope without you.
It was a long way from the service area to the well and up to Langley's rooms, but I didn't say so. Sylvia held my hand and snuggled closer. Her body shook. She must have been freezing in her night shift and shawl. I tried to keep her warm by rubbing her arms and feet, but her shaking didn't subside, even when one of the maids brought her a blanket. It seemed to take all night for the fire to die down completely, but in truth, it was probably less than an hour. From where we sat on the front lawn, it was clear that Langley's room had been destroyed, but beyond that, we couldn't tell. When Jack joined us, Sylvia was half asleep against me. She leapt to her feet as he approached and ran to him. Where's Tommy? Is he all right?
Everyone's fine.
Jack wiped the back of his hand across his brow, smearing it with soot.
The house,
Langley said. Bollard had held him the entire time, and still it did not look as if he wanted to put him down.
The eastern wing may be unstable, but the service area and rest of the house are fine.
But our rooms are on the eastern side, Sylvia said, pulling the blanket to her chin. Where shall we go?
We'll open up the southern wing,
Langley said.
Come, before we freeze to death.
Bollard led the way with Langley in his arms. Sylvia and I followed, Jack behind us. I heard him question each of the servants, asking if they were all right, reassuring the frightened maids that the fire would not flare again.
Boil as much water as you can, as quickly as you can,
Jack told the housekeeper, Mrs. Moore.
Bring water bottles and hot tea to the parlour in the southern wing, then see to your own comfort. Everyone is to avoid the eastern wing until further notice.
But none of the rooms are ready in the southern wing, sir, said Mrs. Moore.
Prepare rooms for the ladies and Mr. Langley. I'll remain in the parlour until the morning.
We skirted the front of the house, and the housekeeper unlocked a side door with one of the keys hanging at her waist. We followed Bollard and Langley into a small room that smelled musty and stale, with only a hint of lingering smokiness. Pale mounds loomed out of the darkness, but as my eyes adjusted, I realized there were dust sheets covering the furniture. Nothing hung on the wood-paneled walls, not even wallpaper. It was a cheerless, bland room. Jack lit two candles on the mantel with a single touch of his forefinger, while Sylvia and I whipped off the sheets. Bollard finally lowered Langley onto one of the chairs and stretched the muscles in his arms. Tommy entered, carrying wood and a box of kindling. A maid trailed behind, laden with hot water bottles. Sylvia grabbed one and cuddled it to her chest. She watched as Tommy set the wood box down.
"You're a saviour," she said to him.
Tommy smiled sheepishly and dipped his head. Sylvia appeared not to see him blush as she blew on her bare hands.
"It's freezing in here."
Tommy placed the wood in the grate and Jack lit the fire. Sylvia sighed and spread her fingers in front of the flickering flames.
"That's better,"
she muttered.
"Go get some rest, Tommy,"
Jack said.
"You deserve it."
"But you need..."
"Never mind us,"
Langley said.
"Mrs. Moore will bring in the tea, and we can serve ourselves."
Tommy left, and silence blanketed our little group. I watched the flames flicker around the wood, their dance seductive as they ate their fill. We all seemed mesmerized by it, but I, for one, felt quite sick. The fire had destroyed part of the house, and it had almost destroyed us, too. If we hadn't got out of Langley's rooms. I shuddered to think what may have happened. I glanced at Jack and was startled to see that he was watching me. He offered a small smile, but I didn't return it. The shock of what he'd done was too fresh. His anger was far more volatile than I'd thought, and more dangerous. He'd said he could control it, but clearly he could not. And, of course, I knew now that he'd lied to me all along. There'd never been any agreement to let me go at Christmas. Langley had intended to keep me prisoner, no matter what. And Jack knew it. Langley also watched me, but with a gravity that was at odds with his earlier nastiness. Ever since then, he'd been quiet, reflective, and not at all the confrontational man I'd come to expect. Mrs. Moore entered with a tray of tea things and left us to serve ourselves. Sylvia poured and handed out cups. She drank hers quickly and gave a deep sigh, then refilled it from the pot.
"Well, this is awkward," she said,
setting the pot down with a loud clank.
"Would someone care to tell me what caused the fire? I take it that one of you couldn't control yourselves,"
she said, with a pointed glare, at first me, then Jack. When neither Jack nor Langley answered, I said,
"Your uncle said something rather shocking to me, something that Jack didn't want me to know."
"You can't leave, Violet." The words sliced through me like a blade. I sucked in a breath to try to steady my nerves, but it was no use. Unlike earlier, I wasn't angry anymore. That moment had passed. Now, I was terrified.
"What didn't Jack want you to know?"
Sylvia looked so innocent, so untouched and honest. Yet she knew the truth, too. She and her cousin, if that's what he was, were part of Langley's plan to keep me prisoner at Freak House.
"It's not important,"
Langley said.
"The important thing is that you didn't fall asleep, Violet. You were close, weren't you? But you didn't. It's a triumph."
"Is that what that was all about?" Jack said.
A thread of steel ran through his otherwise calm voice.
"That's low, August. Even for you."
"Will someone tell me what's going on?" Sylvia asked. "Who set the house on fire? Violet?"
Yes,
Jack said, at the same time that I said, no. He blinked at me. Langley lowered his cup to his saucer.
You don't know,
he murmured. All I know is that you are a pack of wolves, and I despise you. If I must stay here, then I will, but I will not be a party to your charade. I'll not pretend all is well. You'll have to lock me up if you wish to keep me here. My voice shook, my hands too, and I had to set the cup down, lest the tea spill. Violet? Sylvia was at my side, crouching on the floor near my feet. Her gaze searched mine before she turned it on Langley. What have you said to her, Uncle?
Wait.
Jack held up his hand. He shook his head, his brow deeply furrowed.
Tell us what happened up there, Violet. What happened within you, I mean.
I'll not tell you a thing, I snapped. If you and your mad uncle wish to learn anything about me, you'll have to dissect my cadaver in his laboratory. I'm sure it'll give you much pleasure.
Violet, stop,
he whispered, kneeling in front of me, beside his cousin.
It's not what you think.
Isn't it? You heard him as clearly as I did. I'm a prisoner, and you and your cousin are aiding him. You are a liar, a kidnapper, and much more besides. What? Sylvia straightened. That's ridiculous. We have an agreement. You're to stay here until Christmas, but then you're free to go. You're certainly not a prisoner.
Wait, Syl.
Jack laid a hand on her arm, but he continued to stare at me.
You got angry, Violet. Remember, you were furious with August and me, perhaps more than you've ever been in your life. You felt tired, and usually you would fall asleep. But not this time. This time you stayed awake, so you know what happened next. You know, Violet. Remember?
His melodic voice soothed me somewhat, and tears welled in my eyes. How could he have lied to me, after his kindness, his affection? I believed you, I whispered, as tears spilled down my cheeks. I trusted you. Sylvia reached for me, and I pushed her away. Both of you. How could you? Sylvia wailed at Langley. Her uncle sat stoically, unmoved.
Tell me what happened next, Violet,
Jack said, his voice urgent.
The sparks. Do you remember those?
This is absurd, I muttered. Very well. If you want to relive it, then I'll recount the events. You grew angry with your uncle because you didn't want him to tell me what was really going on. That I am a prisoner, and you all know it. It seems you couldn't control your temper this time, Jack. Perhaps you're the one who needs training, not me. I sounded bitter, but I didn't care. My energy had leached from me, and I was too tired to play their game. It was the truth or nothing. They were mad, and I truly was their prisoner. But not forever. I would escape and warn Violet. They couldn't be allowed to win. There was only one way to beat them, and that was admit the truth, or part of it. I would not admit it all and put Vi in danger.
No, Violet,
Langley said, his thick brows plunging into a frown.
You're incorrect. It wasn't Jack. It was you.
Impossible, I snapped.
You'd better explain why,
Jack said.
I can't start fires, you see. I never could.
There. I'd said it, and I felt relieved beyond measure. They'd not want me now that they knew I was of no use to them. All I had to do was convince them that Vi couldn't do it either, and they'd just let me go. Dear God. Jack sat back on his haunches.
Yes,
he said, reaching for me, then pulling away.
You can. August Bollard and I just witnessed it. Those sparks didn't come from me. They came from you. Don't you remember?
My laughter came out harsh, but even as my head thought he was lying, my heart knew the reality. It drummed out a different tune in my chest. It was time I listened. He was right. I was a fire starter. Chapter 11.
Violet.
Jack's soft voice startled me out of my foggy stupor.
Violet, are you telling us you didn't know?
How could she not know? Asked Sylvia.
How indeed? Her face appeared in front of mine, her big eyes filled with concern.
Are you all right, Violet? You look very pale.
I gripped the chair arms until my fingers ached, but I didn't let go. If I did, I was sure I would tip over. My thoughts raced so fast I couldn't quite grasp them. All I knew was that if I could start fires, then everyone at Windermere had lied to me, including Vi.
Violet.
Jack still knelt in front of me, so close I could feel the heat radiating from him. It made my skin hot, my blood hotter. Or was that the heat within me? It all began to make sense. I'd never felt cold, never needed a coat to go outside, and I hated wearing gloves. Where Vi had shivered through our wintry walks, I'd relished the cold breeze against my skin, the frost in the air.
"Do you need to lie down?"
he asked me.
I shook my head. "I need answers."
"Whatever we can provide, we will."
He took a deep breath and scrubbed his hand over his jaw.
"Why did you lie to us?"
Langley said.
"You let us believe you could start fires, even though you thought you couldn't."
"Don't," Jack warned. "Our questions can wait. Let Violet ask hers first."
Langley heaved a deep sigh.
"Very well. I suppose you'd like to know what happened up there."
I nodded.
"Bollard told me what the Gladstone fellow told you."
"Bollard followed us?" Jack snapped. "Bloody hell, August. Why?"
"I originally sent him to London to make sure Violet didn't escape."
He gave a jerky nod of apology.
"I didn't quite trust her."
At Jack's protest, he put up his hand and continued over the top of him.
"He followed all three of you when you visited your friend. Bollard's deaf mother taught him to read lips, and he used the skill in order to keep his distance. He missed some of the conversations, thanks to the poor light, but he caught most. As well as the meeting you had with your friend, he told me everything the Gladstone fellow told Violet."
"What did he tell her?"
Sylvia clicked her tongue.
"And why am I always the last to know?"
"Gladstone informed Violet that her narcolepsy could be cured by subjecting her to a profound dose of the emotion that triggers it."
But we didn't know what that emotion was,
Jack said.
I suspected it was anger. I always did. That first time she unexpectedly fell asleep here and almost set my laboratory on fire, her temper was pronounced.
The first time, I whispered, there was a fire. Why didn't anyone tell me? I remembered the fresh scorch marks on Langley's floor that hadn't been there upon my first visit. I thought Jack had put them there. That was me. Jack and Langley looked askance.
We merely assumed you'd been aware of what happened that day,
Jack said.
It never occurred to me to discuss the incident in detail. Wait a moment.
He turned to Langley.
I see now. You lied to her about not being able to leave because you wanted her to get angry. You let her think Sylvia and I were in on the trickery.
What do you mean? Sylvia stamped a hand on her hip. Once again, I'm the last to know everything.
I had no choice,
Langley said to Jack, ignoring her. He shrugged, as if it were nothing. As if manipulating my emotions and making me believe Jack lied didn't matter, as long as he got the outcome he wanted. The heat rose within me again, but not enough to produce sparks or flames. Unlike Jack. He looked like he wanted to set something alight. His breathing had become ragged. His nostrils flared. At least there were no sparks.
What happened in your room, Uncle? Sylvia asked.
Jack gave a low, bitter laugh.
Our dear Uncle August knew that anger would cure Violet of her narcolepsy, and was also the trigger that would ignite the heat inside her. He decided to set up a little experiment.
Not an experiment,
Langley said.
An experiment is where you test a hypothesis within a controlled environment. I bypassed the experiment and went straight to administering the cure.
Sylvia gasped. Good Lord, was that wise?
I think we all saw how unwise it was,
Jack muttered.
Now it makes sense, Sylvia said. You deliberately made her angry with a lie about her being kept prisoner here. Uncle, how could you?
Enough! I did what was necessary to remove the narcolepsy and memory block. Now we can start her training anew.
I pressed my fingers to my temples. My head ached. My heart was sore.
I should be disturbed by Langley's admission, but I couldn't muster any thoughts in that direction. All I knew was that Vi and Miss Levine had lied to me for many years. My world had been turned upside down and shaken about. I felt like I was watching a grand illusionist working his magic so cleverly and subtly that the sleight of hand went unnoticed. Nothing was as it seemed anymore.
I think you need to lie down,
Jack said, once more crouching in front of me. He peered at me as if he would see my thoughts. It was clear from his earnest gaze that he wanted to hold me, just as I wanted to be held by him. But touching of an intimate nature was impossible. He may have been able to carry me to safety, but there'd been no desire in his touch then, only urgency. It would seem that anger had caused me to light fires, but mutual desire caused us both to combust.
I'll find out if the maids have made up any of the bedrooms, Sylvia said.
Wait!
Langley tapped his finger on the arm of his chair.
You owe me an explanation, Violet. She doesn't,
Jack growled. It's all right, I said. I want to tell you. I needed to, if only to help me make sense of it.
Why did you not tell us you thought you couldn't light fires?
Langley asked.
If you didn't want to stay here, why not inform us of what you thought was the truth?
Three sets of eyes watched me intently. Only Bollard seemed disinterested. I sucked in a breath and let it out slowly before beginning. I was protecting my friend. I thought she was the fire starter, not me. She's not as strong as me, you see. She scares easily, and I wanted to protect her from your experiments. If your intentions truly were to do harm, or to study her, then I wanted to keep her safely at Windermere.
That's so sweet of you, Sylvia said, sniffing and dabbing at the corners of her eyes.
She's lucky to have a friend like you,
Jack said.
Except we're not friends, are we?
I said, bitterness souring my tongue.
How can we be? She's been lying to me for years. She knew I was the one who started the fires, yet she allowed me to think it was her, and that my narcolepsy was somehow tied to it. I shook my head. It sounded ridiculous now that I thought about it. Why would my narcolepsy have been caused by her being able to start fires, or vice versa?
Why would she do that?
Langley asked.
Yes, Jack said. Why lie at all?
I shrugged. I felt like the stupidest fool that ever lived.
I don't know. They were all lying. Miss Levine, Lord Wade, and Violet.
Violet?
Jack frowned.
But you're Violet.
I chewed the inside of my cheek and tasted blood. My name is Hannah Smith. Langley's fingers gripped his chair arms.
Hannah Smith,
he muttered.
You've heard of me?
He lifted a hand in dismissal, but the distance in his eyes remained.
You're not the daughter of Lord Wade?
Jack asked. No, Violet Jameson, my friend, is. I was her companion, confined to the attic alongside her, because she couldn't be let out with her condition. I twisted my hands together, knotting the fingers.
Oh, so I thought. But since I am the fire starter, and she isn't, I don't understand why Lord Wade kept me at all, or why she's in the attic.
Who are your parents?
Jack asked.
Lord Wade's servants. They died when I was a baby. I'm terribly confused, Sylvia said. Are we to address you as Hannah now?
I nodded.
You're not a lord's daughter.
No.
You're a servant?
A lady's companion, which was little better.
Shall I remove myself to the servants' quarters?
I asked, unable to keep my snide tone in check.
No,
Langley said, before the others could speak.
You're our guest as much now as you were when we thought we had Lady Violet. That doesn't change. Sylvia, go see if the maids are finished making up the rooms. Hannah needs some rest. We all do.
I didn't mean anything by it,
Sylvia muttered as she left.
You told me that Lady Violet was the one with red hair,
Jack said to Langley. His eyes narrowed, as if he were deep in thought, trying to solve a puzzle.
They both had red hair, although different shades. I wasn't to know that,
Langley said. So why take me, and not the real Violet Jameson? I asked Jack. You saw us both, yet you kidnapped me. Why? He shook his head, frowning.
I was led to believe.
Believe what? He paused before answering, and I got the feeling whatever he was about to tell me wasn't the entire truth.
I watched you both during your walks. You seemed to be the one in charge. You led, she followed. You were feisty, where she was meek. I assumed that meant you were the Earl's daughter, and that the Earl's daughter was the fire starter. Besides...
The corner of his mouth lifted in a fleeting smile. Then it vanished, and he looked down at his feet.
I felt a strong connection to you, like I was being tugged toward you by an invisible leash.
He looked up again, and our gazes locked. My spine tingled, and heat flared through my body.
Why would I feel that, unless you were a fire starter too?
He shrugged.
I didn't question it.
A tug toward me. Because of my ability, or because he desired me. He smiled again, a soft, knowing smile that I desperately wanted to capture. Knowing it was just for me would have to be enough. Will you teach me to control this? I asked. The smile turned achingly sad.
I hope so. It should be a matter of controlling your temper, but unless you can turn off more intimate emotions at will, then I'm afraid I can't help you when we...
He cleared his throat.
Just as I cannot help myself. I will find a cure, though. I promise you that... Hannah.
I gave an emphatic nod. I no longer needed any convincing to stay at Frackingham. There was nothing for me at Windermere anymore, and everything at Freak House. We'll find it together, I said. I slept fitfully in a bedroom I shared with Sylvia. The following morning, she peppered me with questions over breakfast in the parlour. What was the real Lady Violet like? How could I not know I was a fire starter? And the one that confused me most, why had Lord Wade kept me at all? The only explanation I could come up with was that there was something wrong with Vi. There had to be some reason he'd keep his daughter in the attic with me, away from public view. As I listened to Sylvia's chatter and ate my eggs, I questioned not only my reason for being confined at Windermere, but also my reason for leaving it. Jack had been hiding something when he spoke of kidnapping me and not Vi. I'd noticed his hesitations, yet he'd smoothed out the wrinkles in his story so expertly that I'd failed to recall my unease until now. I would have asked him, except he'd eaten breakfast an hour earlier, according to Tommy, and had since disappeared. I went in search of Langley instead. He had taken his breakfast in his new temporary room, along the corridor from my bedroom. I knocked, and Bollard opened the door.